The Hormuz crisis doesn't exist in a vacuum, and the thread connecting it to what's happening in Eastern Europe is more direct than it might appear. Ukraine struck Wildberries warehouses in at least 10 Russian cities this week, destroying roughly 10% of Russia's largest online retailers' logistics capacity. What makes this strategically interesting isn't just the scale of the strike, it's the targeting logic. Wildberries' warehouse network overlaps with logistics infrastructure that Russia uses for military supply chain management. Ukraine is essentially attacking civilian-adjacent commercial logistics precisely because it serves dual purposes.
And the discovery of 62 American-made components inside a Russian Iskander ballistic missile is the story that's going to generate the most uncomfortable conversations in Washington this week. An Iskander is a short-range ballistic missile with a range of up to 500 kilometers. It's been used extensively in Ukraine. Finding 62 U.S.-manufactured parts inside one raises immediate questions about enforcement failures in export controls, third-country transshipment routes, and whether existing sanctions regimes are actually containing Russia's military-industrial capacity. The number 62 is specific enough that Ukrainian forensic teams clearly did a thorough component-level teardown.
The transshipment problem has been documented since 2022, when researchers started finding Western microelectronics inside captured Russian equipment. What's changed is the scale and the sophistication of the supply chains involved. Chips and components that originate in American fabs end up moving through intermediary countries, sometimes Turkey, sometimes Central Asian states, sometimes Gulf entrepôts, and re-enter Russia in ways that are technically legal at each individual step, but functionally illegal in aggregate. The 62-component finding suggests that process is not slowing down.
Putin signing new military orders in the days after Kazakhstan urged a war freeze is a pointed response. Kazakhstan is Russia's closest CSTO ally that has maintained public neutrality on the war. President Tokayev has walked a very deliberate tightrope. When Tokayev publicly calls for a freeze and Putin responds by signing military orders within days, that's not coincidence. That's a message directed as much at other post-Soviet states as it is at the West.
And Zelensky's warning of a prepared massive overnight Russian strike, issued as a public preemptive warning rather than a post hoc report, reflects something important about Ukrainian intelligence collection capability. They have enough visibility into Russian preparations to issue warning hours in advance. That's a meaningful shift from earlier in the war, when strikes often came without warning. Whether the strike actually materialized, we're still getting initial reports. But the warning itself demonstrates that Ukraine's situational awareness at the operational level has genuinely improved.
Russia's ruble stablecoin collapse under Western sanctions is the economic punctuation mark on all of this. Russia had launched the ruble-backed stablecoin as a partial workaround for dollar-denominated financial systems, an attempt to conduct trade in sanctions-adjacent corridors using crypto infrastructure. The collapse tells you that sanctions enforcement has gotten sophisticated enough to close even those secondary rails. The pressure is cumulative, and it's working at the margins, even if it hasn't changed Putin's fundamental strategic calculus.
And Trump saying he'd be disappointed if China arms Iran, just disappointed, is a sentence worth examining for what it doesn't say. It doesn't say consequences. It doesn't say sanctions. The word disappointed is essentially a diplomatic non-threat from a president who has used much stronger language over trade tariffs. China, watching American forces stretched across the Iran theater, is doing its own calculations about what the cost of arming Iran actually is.